Javier Milei Rugpool?
Tell
me more.
President of the country made his own. It was like, it was Libra coin.
Oh, it's another Libra fucking meme coin.
Yeah.
It's just like the Trump administration and the Trump coin and Melania coin.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, hey guys, we have this coin, and not only do they make money on every single transaction because they own the exchange, they also had that dinner the other week with like the anyone with over like $300 million in the coin can come and like buy access to have dinner with Trump, and like a quarter of the people showed up with masks on, which makes me great.
That's crazy.
He did it too?
Yeah, he did it too. But it like, so, I mean, you know, like Melania coin didn't hold value. Trump coin didn't hold value. But like Malay's coin compared, like it was like, it made Trump coin look ethical. like it looked, made Trump coin look like above board. This is perfect because it like dropped. Like people's savings got wiped out. It was insane. And it was like he just met some people at like a crypto summit.
And then he adds his credibility. Mm-hmm. People buy into the coin.
Exactly.
Insiders sell the coin. Uh-huh. Well, what's so interesting is that so many crypto exchanges, they're built for...
Oh, fuck. I got you.
Welcome back to Gossip Without Prejudice. Guys, my name is John Socia. With me in studio today is our fantastic executive producer, Sam. Sam, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's we started out gray here, and now it's a little sunny. I mean, after 85 yesterday, geez, what a lovely day.
You know, another day, another lawsuit. We're going to be going over today is three different stories I wanted to highlight. And first, I wanted to say, yes, I am aware of Trump and what he is doing in the news and the media. A classic tactic of the Trump administration is basically to flood the zone with nonsense. Lowers court says no more tariffs. Appeals court 5 hours later says tariffs are back on. Mm-hmm. Trump imposes tariffs on the European Union and then says, psych, we're actually delaying them 90 days until July or whatever. All that stuff is a distraction. We're aware of it. We've been debating whether or not to actually be like another Trump coverage legal podcast. Mm. I don't find it worth it. So today we're just going to be taking a look at some other lawsuits to try and just like give everyone a break from the 24/7 news cycle. Yeah. Sam, before I go into my stories, got anything for me?
I mean, yeah, Trump. I only have Trump pardoning NBA young boy.
Seriously?
Which is, yeah.
I got to look that up right now.
That was
now.
My number one story of the day.
Oh, young boy, this guy? Young boy never broke again?
Young boy never broke again.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Okay, what did this guy do?
I think it was some sort of, so sentence for just gun-related charges. I think it was like carrying, I mean, because he has, so if you check out his music video, right, like his first big music video, I forget what it's called, but it like literally shows a news headline of NBA young boy sentenced to jail for aggravated assault while possessing a firearm.
Well, okay.
And so like it's his, it's part of the vibe, you know?
Well, this is the same energy as like Todd and Julie Chrisley, who are like reality TV show stars that he recently released from federal custody.
Yeah.
They had 2022 convictions for fraud and tax crimes. Also, there was like this other guy who got a pardon whose mom... Oh, wait, was that young boy who's like his mom supported Trump? And he mentioned that in the pardon. Anyways, everyone's getting a fucking pardon these days.
Everyone.
Pardon's up for sale. Other,
if you don't want to pay your taxes, just become friends with Trump and just, then don't pay your taxes.
Just give Trump $1 million.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, he's been on. That was actually 200, and my apologies. Young boy and the tax cheats was part of 237 pardons released earlier this week.
I mean, you were just talking about flooding the zone.
Yeah, like, you gotta flood the zone.
Yeah, my side of the internet has been talking about nothing but NBA Youngboy.
For rapper and former politicians. highlight reel, former Connecticut Governor John Rowland, who was convicted on one election fraud charges since 2.5 years. Kentrell Galdon. Yep, that's the government name of NBA Youngboy. Convicted fraudster Kevin Eric Badston.
Wow.
Bisden, Mark Bashaw, an army officer who was convicted in a court-martial of violating COVID protection rules. Good old boy. Tanner Mansell and John Moore, who were convicted after a theft at sea. What the fuck? Pirates? Yeah. When they released sharks they thought were being illegally fished, it turns out the sharks are being legally caught for research purposes.
What?
we actually got to highlight these guys. Those guys sound awesome.
This is crazy.
Michael Harris, co-founder of Death Row Records, who spent decades in prison on drug charges.
Oh, wow.
Harris had his sentence commuted by Trump during his first term and was issued a full pardon on Wednesday. Okay, so he just got the pardon. He was released with time served in like 2018 or whatever.
Okay.
Also, Todd and Julie Chrisley, just like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And he also wants to take a look, take a look at pardoning a group of men charged with planning to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer in 2020.
No way.
Yeah, those cowboy dudes who were like planning an insurrection. And they were, it was like insurrection light where they were going to like grab the governor. And they also had ideas like if they couldn't grab the governor, they were going to like take over government buildings and take hostages and like foment an uprising.
Wow.
Those guys are actually very dangerous. I mean, we're memeing on this a little bit.
Yeah.
But those guys are not, you don't want to fuck with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, like, good news for democracy. Yeah. The vigilantes are on back on the streets.
Yeah. It's really just unleashing supervillains.
Yeah.
So that, thank you for bringing this one to my attention. I think I'll have to, you know, reflect on the state of our democracy if we've gotten this far from considering.
And also listen to some NBA Youngboy.
Yes. we'll put his Spotify in the show notes.
Yeah.
I'm really all about second chances for federal gun charges, apparently. Anyways, first on the docket for today, our first story, Disney is suing YouTube. Mm-hmm. So on Thursday, May 22nd, YouTube announced that it hired Disney executive Jocelyn Connolly to be its global head of media and sports, which is basically just like business guy 101. Disney filed a California state lawsuit in Los Angeles County on May 21st against YouTube parent company Alphabet, which is Google. Google is owned by Alphabet, so it's like a mega conglomerate. Google, YouTube, a whole bunch of back-end data analytics. Yeah. They basically, they're like the other Meta that no one talks about. Meta just has a worse brand. So Alphabet is their is Google's parent company.
Yeah.
To stop the appointment, citing breach of contract, unfair competition, interference with a contractual relationship, tortious interference, etc. Disney argues that Connolly could leak confidential information.
So it's like a really big boy non-compete suit.
It's pretty much a non-compete suit. So to frame this, we'll be going into the causes of action here briefly. We'll give this a high overview to see if I can cover a charging document or a complaint in like the time we have.
Yeah.
But it's very clear non-competes in California specifically and also here in Washington are very difficult to enforce just as a matter of public policy. The legislatures have decided it's really hard to enforce non-competes. They have to be reasonable. Whether or not you agree with that, it depends, but they are enforceable either where the knowledge is extremely sensitive or specific or niche, or when it's high up in a company and they have strategic knowledge.
Mm.
So like here, strategic knowledge, head of the company, the concern is pretty fucking palpable here in that like they hired your executive.
Yeah.
He knows everything.
Uh-huh. And this time you kind of get it. Like I you know, not to take Disney's side.
Not to like dick ride for Disney.
Exactly.
Well, Connolly worked at ESPN and Disney for over 20 years.
Wow.
So like ESPN, Disney also, for those of you that do know, they also now own Hulu. They own ESPN Sports Network. So like Disney is definitely more than cartoons at this point.
Yeah.
Most recently in his role as their president of platform distribution. So he's all about media distribution.
Yeah.
He spearheaded strategy and third-party media purchases for Disney.
Yeah. Right?
So he not only knows everything about Disney's acquisition strategy, he knows everything about every company they've ever made a bid on. And most recently led Disney's negotiations with YouTube for a renewal of their licensing agreement. He is exiting just as Disney is set to launch their ESPN specific streaming platform. They've got this product launch coming up, and the one guy who knows all of it, it's fucking leaving. So he probably had to tell them. So executives are very different in that they usually have most like employees are W-2, they're at will, they don't have employment contracts. Most executives have huge contracts that lay out commitments that have obligations. They usually get paid a lot more, but there's usually a lot more stringent about what they can and can't do, when they can leave, what the procedures are. And it's pretty clear because when boards appoint CEOs, you want to know he's going to be there for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, they can still fire him, but that's where the term golden parachute comes from, is that for two reasons, when CEOs negotiate these salary packages, they know if they get fired, they want a payday. And that's because of the payday, but it's also for a political reason, is they want it to hurt the company to fire them.
Yeah.
Right? So they want the board to think twice before cutting them a huge check.
Yeah, exactly.
Or cashing out their stock options or whatever the fuck.
It makes it a little...
It makes it harder, right? But boards tolerate those provisions because it's the only way they can get the very best guys to come work for them.
Yeah.
At least that's the theory, you know? And further, they also tend not to punish CEOs. Mm. Like, you hear about a CEO absolutely fucking up, like a CEO of Bungie, who's putting out Marathon and has mismanaged the originally developed Halo, but now more recently was more famous for Destiny.
Getting sued by all these graphic designers.
Yeah, getting sued by all the, they're fucking up big time. Mm-hmm. They've laid off like 70% of their staff from 10 years ago. And the CEO, if he makes an exit, he's probably not going to get punished by their parent company, Sony, now, or whoever is in charge of him, or the board, or whatever structure they have internally. Because the theory is, if it's seen publicly, particularly at publicly traded companies, Bungie is private, so you know, we'll see if that analogy holds. They don't want to make an example of him, because then the next guy who might come in and take his place is like, well, are you guys gonna, if it doesn't work, are you gonna
string me up?
Yeah, string me up and make an example of me. And so that's why it's so difficult for the largest corporation CEOs to be held accountable. It's not because the boards think they've necessarily done a good job or can't punish them.
Yeah.
It's because they're worried about the next guy.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really tough. And we're gonna see some of those dynamics come out here. Are you with me so far?
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So the complaint to only has three causes of action. Disney is suing YouTube, specifically a Delaware company.
Yeah.
Justin Connolly as an individual. And Doe's 1 through 10. So do you know what Doe pleading is? Doe pleading is, I covered this once a couple episodes ago. Yeah. But when you file a complaint, you know some shit's up, right? Something's gone down, but you probably have limited information.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you do is, some states and jurisdictions will permit what's called Doe pleading, where you just fucking say placeholder people 1 through 100
or
1 through 10.
Yeah.
And some places don't allow it, and some places put limits on the number of does. But
Doe
pleading is still a thing in many places of the country, and they've done that here. So they're saying... YouTube, who we know is involved, and Justin Connolly, who is obviously involved, and then whoever, whatever middlemen, other fucking executives.
There are guys who are guilty, but I don't know who they are yet.
Exactly. And that's what the legal process is supposed to find out, through something called discovery. Now, discovery is basically just the process of legally being able to ask questions and demand documents from the other side.
Gotcha.
And that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's three pretty straightforward causes of action. One, breach of contract, first cause of action. Two, tortious interference with contractual relations.
Mm.
And three, unfair competition, business and professional code, section 17200.
Gotcha.
Which are all, this is all under California. This is a state lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's filed in Superior Court of LA County.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about LA County, one of my professors used to practice in California, in LA.
Oh, wow.
LA is so fucking huge.
Yeah.
So... the venue within LA County, there's like, I'm told, like 12 LA courthouses.
Whoa.
Right. Here in King County, there's two.
Uh-huh.
And even then, they're pretty close together. So venue isn't usually, like, within King County, isn't usually a big deal.
Yeah.
Huge fucking deal in California, because like, if your car accident was like two streets up, you could be in a different courthouse.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm pretty sure LA County alone has a larger population than like Washington.
Yeah, exactly. So like most states.
Yeah, like we only have three federal court divisions here. It's division 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
One is up in Seattle, one is down by Olympia, and one is out in Spokane.
Mm.
And that's it. They have like a fuck ton.
Yeah, it's insane.
Now, Disney states that Connolly's contract did provide him a one-time right to terminate the employment agreement for any reason, effective March 1st, 2027, so long as Connolly provided written notice of his intent to exercise this right no later than December 31st, 2026.
Gotcha.
Connolly agreed not to engage in business or become associated with any of Disney's competitors, which, now that they're in the media space, I would say YouTube is very much a competitor, and acknowledged in his contract that his expertise is of a peculiar value, the loss of which cannot be reasonably adequately compensated in damages and action of law. So that's key language, because the heart of Disney's ask is, we don't want fucking money.
Yeah.
We want you to stop fucking working for our competitor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever, however this shakes out. They want equitable relief.
Yeah.
They don't want financial relief because it cannot, like, you can't quantify the juju that this guy brings to the team.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what they're asking, essentially hoping that the court does, is just orders that, like, fucking stop working for YouTube.
Yeah.
And then sends him back home. So Disney insists that YouTube was and is aware of the nature and specifics of Connolly's standing contract, and yet still made him an offer and induced him to breach said contract. So that's actually fair. There's something called tortious interference.
Yeah.
That basically means, like, so this isn't a perfect parallel, but, like, if you had a contract with Hemet Law.
Yeah.
No, you happen to be W-2, but if you had a contract that said you have to work here until 2027, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I had another company and I came along and I was like, I'll give you $1,000 to come work for me.
Uh-huh.
And then they found out, like, and then your original employer found out that it was me who reached out and rewarded or induced you to breach your original agreement.
Yeah.
They'd sue you to stop you, but they'd also sue me to fucking knock it off. Uh-huh. You caused us damage by doing this.
Yeah.
And that's how YouTube is being dragged in.
Yeah.
So Disney demanded that YouTube cease interference with Connolly to no avail. Like, they reached out before the lawsuit. Connolly notified Disney of his resignation effective May 16th.
Wow.
Disney asked Connolly if he was leaving to work for YouTube, and Connolly never responded.
I'm just going to leave that one on red.
Don't put it in writing, boys.
Uh-huh.
Disney states that YouTube is continuing to interfere with Connolly's employment agreement by employing him.
Yeah.
So they're saying our contract stands.
Uh-huh.
Are you with me so far?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Like, both sides have a lot. Well, YouTube has a lot to gain.
Yeah.
Disney has a lot to lose. Like, and especially someone who's that central to the team.
Yeah.
Like, and something that YouTube is genuinely trying to compete with and that they can go around ESPN for.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, especially sports.
And what's so interesting about this corporate litigation is that, like, because it's strategic, these are multi-billion dollar companies.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they spend $100 million on this lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's worth it to them.
Yeah, exactly.
If it means dominating the new market, that's just a business expense.
Yeah.
And that's why this is not a lawsuit I see settling unless, because, like, there's no compromise. It's either you eat the bar of soap or you don't.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see which way this lands.
Especially considering, like, that ESPN continues to be one of, like, Disney's most valuable assets.
Yes. Exactly. Like, the network.
Uh-huh.
Or I should say, they're about to launch the ESPN streaming platform because, like, I don't fucking like watching hockey on Hulu.
Yeah.
Looking at fucking you guys at Hulu, which is Disney.
Yeah.
ESPN's reach, the brand awareness isn't really what they want. What they want is the viewers, right? The guys who listen in every Sunday, Saturday for different sports networks. Women's soccer and women's sports is actually making a major, like, they have like a 17 to 20% viewership increase year for year for the last 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So, like, Seattle Reign, there are like billboards for Seattle Reign around the women's Seattle women's soccer team all around town that there were not 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And fucking Disney knows that. And ESPN is the key. So the first cause of action, breach of contract, is against Connolly personally. So you can have different causes of action against different parties. It doesn't have to be everything against everyone.
Gotcha.
So they're coming after Connolly specifically. They're asserting that Connolly materially breached his contract, really, you know, refused to perform the services required of him because they're saying, hey, you still work here. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
You actually still work here, so you're not showing up.
Uh-huh.
Fucking come back to work.
Wow.
So technically he's actually overemployed right now. We gotta tell those boys over at r/overemployment.
He's just working so hard, man.
He's working like a dog.
Yeah.
And then Disney was like, hey, we were ready to pay you, so we're holding up our end of the bargain. Where are you? Because of Connolly's breach, Disney believes they are harmed and will continue to be harmed by this lack of knowledge. They're not seeking damages because they believe he could not possibly provide relief for the severity of injury that he's causing because it's knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Even if they bankrupt the guy, what does he have, like 10 million?
Yeah, exactly.
That's nothing for... Disney?
For Disney,
yeah. Disney doesn't give a fuck about 10 or even $100 million. Yeah. I'm sure he's rich, though. The second cause of action is against YouTube, right? And Disney is saying... You, YouTube, as a company, a Delaware corporation, and whoever's fucking idea on your team it was to bring Connolly in against, you know, whoever induced this, 1 through 10, we're fucking coming for
you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Now they
we're suing Alphabet A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Every single fucking one of you. Now, in general, you can amend a complaint once.
Yeah.
And then, depending on to remove to jurisdiction, the plaintiff can sometimes have to... like ask for leave of court, but generally you get one free amendment at your complaint. Mm. And then later, if you need to amend again to add additional parties or whatever, you have to ask the court.
Gotcha.
And this is pretty easy to understand because you don't want a fucking moving target.
Yeah.
Right. The defense is like, if you're constantly changing the cause of action, the claims, then they'll never be able to fucking do the lawsuit. So you get like one free amendment just cause. And then after that, you usually got to check in with the court.
So that's why you put in the does, is so that you don't, or am I misunderstanding that?
No.
So you don't have to move the goalposts as much?
No. If you're just adding new parties, courts usually, as long as you're like, not substantially mixing up the pot.
Yeah.
Usually so. And just because leave of court is often needed doesn't mean the court will deny it.
Gotcha.
If you have good cause, court's not going to stop you from bringing in new parties generally.
Gotcha.
Unless it's, you know, prejudicial or like there's some impropriety. Usually there isn't.
Yeah.
And then the third cause of action, unfair competition and violation of business and professional code 17200. Third cause of action against YouTube. And does 1 through 10, again, they're saying YouTube is a violation of California's unfair competition law by soliciting and recruiting Connelly away from his standing contract. Mm. With California has some very, very, very strong unfair competition laws, UCLs. Yeah. It's sweeping consumer protection statute regarded as one of the most powerful in the U.S., aiming to prohibit unlawful, unfair, and fraudulent business practices. Though the law has existed in one form or another for almost 100 years, 2004's Prop 64 limited those who could cite UCL to people and entities who have actually suffered injury and lost money or property, which Disney does qualify as.
Yeah.
And they're also seeking a preliminary and a preliminary injunction to prevent Connelly from working further.
Gotcha.
Now, injunctions are pretty hard to grab. You, generally speaking, the standard is that there's got to be irreparable harm. Mm-hmm. You've got to show that you're likely to prevail on the merits. And if applicable, you've also got to put up a bond.
Gotcha.
So, like, the idea is that, like, they don't want people, like, getting an injunction and not putting up or shutting up. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, if you didn't have to put up any money, they're not necessarily applicable here. If you didn't have to put anything up to, like, get the injunction, then everyone's just going to ask for an injunction and the lawsuit will be moot because you've already got an injunction. So people could abuse that by just extending the lawsuit. Uh-huh. And also preliminary injunctions tend to only be 60, 90, 100 days often. Mm-hmm. Though sometimes they can last the duration of the case. It really depends.
Yeah.
And that will also depend on the response, the answer by YouTube. So this is only the complaint document I have here, which is only one half of the story.
Uh-huh.
The court is really going to want to see
Both sides.
There's probably going to be hearing on the merits, or at least some you know, written pleadings. This isn't California. I'm not as familiar with California. Well, the information I'm sharing here is just broadly general.
Yeah.
But I'd be really interested to hear more about what's going on there.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah. I mean, the unfair, the UCL in California, is wide ranging and meant to be a sort of catch all for business misconduct that plaintiffs may not be able to challenge otherwise. It's mostly designed for consumer protection, but consumer protection is broadly interpreted, and businesses also utilize it that way, notably in areas of advertising, employment, and contracts more generally.
Yeah.
UCL does not allow for seeking punitive damages, but it does allow for restitution and equitable and injunctive relief.
Gotcha.
The lawsuit specifically that Disney has set forth against YouTube is just the next in line of a number of entertainment company lawsuits that have each been like trying to claw each other's lives out lately, particularly for C-suite executive talent. Netflix seems to have been the common denominator thus far in luring employees away from their company and then getting sued for it.
Wow.
In 2016, 20th Century Fox sued Netflix for hiring executives Tara Flynn and Marcos Waltenberg while they were still under their fixed-term contracts with the company. A state trial court granted Fox an injunction which blocked Netflix from encouraging Fox talent to breach their contracts.
Whoa.
Netflix filed a countersuit alleging that the executives' Fox employment contracts were unenforceable as an illegal non-compete.
Wow.
Yeah. The California Court of Appeals later upheld the injunction, rejecting Netflix's challenge. So, non-competes are broadly challengeable in California. Uh-huh. Often they don't fucking work.
Yeah.
If they're too punitive, like you can't work in entertainment for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's most of a career right there.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's too wide geographically.
Yeah.
Like you can't work anywhere on earth.
Yeah.
For 50 years. Uh-huh. And, you know, it has to be narrowly tailored to achieve the objective.
Have you heard about these, like, there was subways that had people signing non-competes for their sandwich artists? Yeah, yeah.
Dude, put the fries in the bag.
Yeah, exactly.
God
it's damn. Like, what secrets are they going to give away?
That's the point of a chain, is that all of it's the same. The recipes are the same. The tools are the same. Oh,
yeah,
that's so stupid.
I know. You couldn't work at a Jimmy John's if you worked at a subway, which is so funny. Like,
because employment contracts, can do that. Mm-hmm. Is that like they can be like, hey, you can't work for XYZ specific competitors.
Yeah.
And that's possible, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes understandable,
yeah,
especially if you have like really niche knowledge, like AI talent.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
if you're the guy that wrote ChatGPT, you can be like, you can't work for Grok.
Yeah, exactly. The fuck AI, yeah, they can't just poach you.
Yeah, Elon is cooking up. Uh-huh. And here they tried to overturn these non-competes, but broadly speaking, non-competes have been upheld by particularly by California courts when it comes to executives and high strategic knowledge.
Which makes sense because entertainment is like,
fungible.
Yeah, LA's number one export also. Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, exactly. What else do they specialize in?
And so, then fun fact, Netflix, the boys at Netflix did it again.
Mm-hmm.
They were in hot water when Activision Blizzard sued the company in 2020 for poaching its chief financial officer, Spencer Neumann, when he was only halfway through his fixed term contract. Because it's just a business expense. Yeah. They're like, hey, this guy's good. Uh-huh. Activision accused Netflix of unfair competition, intentional interference with an employee contract, and aiding and abetting breach of fiduciary duty, which is a unique element when it comes to a chief financial officer.
Gotcha.
Activision went as far as alleging that Netflix, quote, has a pattern and practice of unlawfully inducing employees of other competitors to breach their fixed term contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of this stuff has been happening over the last couple of years. Executive talent at the very top is one of the, like, human capital, in my opinion, is one of the most powerful assets a company can have.
Yeah.
Ironically, in accounting, you cannot account for human capital.
Yeah.
So humans are not assets,
mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because my day job is I run a service company at Hemant Law, the admin at Hemant Law, and we are a service company, and that means our greatest assets go down the elevator every single day. They go home, they have families, and then they come back and they do their work. That's the bad, quote unquote, bad part of being a service company is they have almost no like capital to start one.
Yeah.
But the flip side is you can lose all that talent really easily, and we see that playing out a lot at C-suite level executive catfights.
That makes sense. And so with stuff like this, I mean, do you think YouTube expected this much of a fight out of a bit?
They
were prepared.
They were probably, or at least they were prepared, or they were like, if we can avoid the injunction, the preliminary injunction, we'll get most of what we need done.
Yeah.
That would not be surprised if that was their analysis.
Uh-huh.
I think they also, it's possible, I've been at some of these C-suite A-suite level meetings at large companies.
Yeah.
These guys are no smarter than we are. Like some of these guys, it's very possible these guys just didn't even fucking, they were just like, yeah, hire him, let him get him in the building. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. I'd really want to see the response. We call them responses in family law. So if you ever catch me doing that, bully me in the comments. I really want to see the answer.
Gotcha.
I think that'll really set the stage for how cooked is everyone?
Yeah.
We really need to see both sides of the claims and then see how the fight plays out.
Uh-huh.
Now, Disney rightly sees YouTube as a major threat to the entertainment dynasty. The monthly Gauge report put out by Nielsen shows continuous leadership by YouTube in the streaming space, accounting for 12.4% of all TV consumption in the U.S. in April, while Disney, which includes Disney Plus, Hulu, and the ESPN network, only accounts for 5%.
Whoa.
Yeah, while Disney does have the benefit of a robust and storied entertainment vertical that encompasses like theatrical releases, theme park, you know, they've got a bunch of ancillary brands, music, toys, blah, 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 blah. YouTube is beefing up their own portfolio over the last couple of years. At the same time, the company successfully edged out Netflix, and Amazon in 2022 to secure a lucrative streaming deal with the NFL.
Wow.
So, and it is the top podcast streaming platform in the country. Fun fact, podcasts right now, the reason we've been a video podcast more or less from day one is because a quarter of all podcasts last year, according to several different reputable reports or so, were streamed on a TV.
Wow.
The future of podcasting is basically TV shows with a strong audio element.
That's wild. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. That's insane. One of the reasons why we're doing this. Uh-huh. That's also why Stephen Bartlett with Diary of a CEO, that's why he's more of a YouTuber than a podcaster.
Yeah.
I would argue. He just happens to put a podcast on YouTube, but he's not a YouTuber. He's a talk show host.
Yeah, exactly.
So reflect on that over the next 5 years. Connolly clearly has the wealth of knowledge around sports entertainment ecosystem after spending the better part of his career in programming for ESPN and Disney. Remember, 12.4% or 5%. It's generally acceptable to recruit employees from rival companies, but certain situations can be very risky if there's a standing contract, and we're obviously seeing that here.
Yeah.
The lawsuit is a testament to how fierce the competition is. We'll be putting the OG court complaint in the show notes if you guys want to take a read yourself. It basically is a pretty straightforward story. Fucking, you recruited this guy, knock it off.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Injunctive relief, they don't want money.
And so what happens? What happens if they win? Does he just have the most awkward day back at the office ever?
I think at this point, the game isn't to get him back. It's just to stop him from being over there.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to be like, come on back, buddy. Mm-hmm. And then they'll just park him in a closet because now you can't be trusted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So, but the denial of his talents to their competitors, that's the win.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Because like now you've shown yourself not to be loyal.
Yep.
Or at least not to be like where they're probably fine with him moving on at the end of his contract in theory. Like I think they'd take that a lot easier. Yeah. But if I had a high level executive and then they left in the middle of their contract and then I got them back,
yeah,
I'd be like, congrats, you're here with me now. You're not, I'm not telling you anything.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But you're here
yeah.
and not there, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I would want. It would be a real shame too. I mean, we only have three managers here at Hemant Law because we're a small team and we don't want like a billion managers running around. Two or three is already bad enough. But our legal operations director, Jordan, if she, not that she's planning on leaving, but if she left after we made a financial commitment to her, or if I left after Mr. Hemant, you know, left a financial commitment to me and I promised to stay for a fixed term.
Yeah.
And then I left. They would be rather upset because they know a lot about how this office runs and that's valuable to our competitors.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's a really interesting story. We'll keep an eye on it as the time unfolds. All right. Thanks for listening in, guys. We got a quick ad break, which is in the form of me telling you about our sponsors, HemantLaw.com. Go to HemantLaw.com/GWP. We're good attorneys. If you want to work for us or if you need a family law attorney, just head on over to our website. You know what to do. And also a thank you to our other sponsor, Quimby Bar Prep. They give us all the questions for our LTBE, STBE, and all other non-attorney takes a bar exam that you would probably seen us on our socials for. We also release extended cuts here on the podcast feed on occasion. Thank you to Quimby. And finally, thank you to Time Billing. Ooh. More on that later. And with that, we're jumping into our second story of the episode today. Are you familiar with the HR company Workday?
I've heard of them. I've seen their ads where they're like, usually things are hard running a business. But we make it amazingly easy.
When they fucking like HR companies, SaaS HR companies like give HopeCore bait to like business owners. Yeah, so they're like, you don't know what you're fucking doing. We find people. Yeah, exactly.
You won't need antidepressants if you use our CRM.
What does Salesforce even do?
Yeah.
I don't even know what they do these days. They're just... Salesforce.
They're just Salesforce.
Anyways, HR software company Workday is facing a class action lawsuit that alleges its applicant screening technology commonly used by companies for hiring is discriminatory. So the class representative in 2024 is a man named Derek Mobley, M-O-B-L-E-Y. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly. Mobley. And the guy.
Feels good.
First, before I go into this further, are you familiar with what a class action is?
Yeah, I mean, basically, a bunch of people get together and sue a company together for...
Yeah, so broadly speaking, yes. I'll try not to get too far into the weeds here, but it allows collective action by a group of similar individuals or entities, usually people, where we have one person called the class representative come forward that then represents everyone in the group.
Yeah.
You have to get leave of court to represent a class action, which is to say you have to, like, you can't just show up and say we have a class. You have to show up at the courthouse, ask the judge, like, hey, can I represent this class, I being counsel? And then if they say yes, then you've got a class.
Yeah.
Then you've got to argue about, if they even let you get this far, you've got to argue about, like, what the class is, if it should be class certified. And so basically the idea is, assuming you clear all those various hurdles that we will cover in more detail later, later is in another episode, sorry guys, you all have to send out notices to other people in the class. And you may have seen these horrible emails and websites where you like, do you have mesothelioma, et cetera? Have you been, you know, given blood poisoning by the military's earplugs? Or
the
like,
Meta class action lawsuit.
Yeah, the
lawsuit
Meta privacy
recently.
Class action lawsuit. I got seven Zuck Bucks from that. And I referenced the Zuck Bucks because the point of a class is that it holds entities responsible for damages that like are too inconsequential to like bring alone individually as an individual. So if Verizon, this happened like 12 years ago, adds an extra dollar to my bill unlawfully, I'm not going to sue them for that. That's just the reality. It's too much trouble. Ignoring the cost of legal expenses, just the time commitments, it's just not worth it for a variety of reasons.
Not feasible.
It's not feasible, right? But if they add $1 to 500 million users' bills.
Yeah.
Well, then that's something, uh-huh. right? There's something to that.
Yeah.
Especially since that, hey, I'm a Verizon customer between 2007 and 2015. In these geographic areas, or like in the United States or whatever.
Yeah.
Not that there's 500 million people in the US. and if you are notified of the class action and you opt out, then I can sue, if I want, can sue Verizon individually. But otherwise, they can settle the issue as a group.
Yeah.
Right? And then everyone gets a tiny little... I think that happened with Fortnite, like or well, like Roblox or something.
I think I heard about this.
Yeah, everyone got a little bit of dystopian bucks. V-Bucks. Yeah,
dystopian bucks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what a class action, very broadly, roughly speaking, does. It's a representative group.
Gotcha.
The injustice of a class action is that no one fucking makes any money except the attorneys.
Yeah.
So the way it works is once you have class certification and you've gathered enough people in the class, you agree on a pot of money in a settlement between the plaintiff's counsel and defense.
Yeah.
And then the way these work is that plaintiff's counsel actually gets like a slice of the pot. So ironically, the reason all these legal notices when you're notified you might be in a class are so crucial and so terrible at the same time is that like they don't want you to sign up because the more money is left in the pot, the more... plaintiff's counsel takes home.
Gotcha.
That's why they put no effort in making it look nice because they have to meet certain legal obligations to tell everyone, but that doesn't mean it has to be pretty or accessible.
Oh, yeah. That's why those mesothelioma ads look like shit.
They look like shit.
Yeah.
But they had to put them out there.
Uh-huh.
And for a variety of reasons, I'm really giving you guys the oversimplified cliff notes here. You should also know that like a settlement has to be approved by the court. So it is not like a private lawsuit where like if you're suing me and then we just come to an agreement, have it in writing, court will be like, meeting adjourned.
Yeah.
Right. I don't care what you arranged it privately, not my fucking concern, leave. Not the case of class actions. Once you have class certification, you leave of court to even propose a settlement.
Gotcha.
And sometimes if they propose a settlement, court approves it, and then the pot of money isn't big enough for the number of people that sign up that can blow up the whole settlement deal.
Wow.
So there's a whole bunch of like politics that surround class action. Yeah. And what's crazy is that the class representative usually doesn't make that much money. Like, really, the only winners are plaintiff's counsel.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Doesn't make that much money.
Yeah.
And defense counsel, but defense counsel tends to be paid hourly, so they don't give a fuck.
Oh, yeah. Fight. Exactly.
And then there are, they're called legal administration companies. So, like, what they do is they manage the class action sign up.
Yeah.
They'll put out the ads. They'll put out, they'll manage the intake and the sign up and screen people for class likeness. They'll do all that stuff for you and they'll take a slice of the settlement too.
Uh-huh.
So that's how these attorneys, despite having no like administrative or advertising knowledge, they just sign up with like Next Legal or something and then they outsource that part of the process.
Yeah.
So they can just focus on the legal stuff.
And it feels like most of the punishment for the company, I mean, the monetary punishment is always like rough or whatever, but is in the brand reputation that is lost. Like, Home Advisor used to be Angie's List, class action lawsuit. Yep. Then it was Home Advisor, and now it's back to Angie's List after another class action.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it went Angie's List, Home Advisor, Angie's List.
We've got to get into that later. Uh-huh. That's fucking funny.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, that was a very cliff notes on class action.
Yeah,
group of people of similar circumstance that's been approved by the court and with counsel approved by the court is then suing, you know, a company or entity who will have to come to the table to probably settle with them. And then that settlement will also have to be approved by the court.
Yeah.
So this is just the initial part. So in 2014, excuse me, immediately fucks up. In 2024, Derek Mobley sued Workday. So like last year, claiming that the software's algorithm caused him to be rejected from more than 100 jobs over 7 years because of his age, race, and disabilities.
Whoa.
Mobley, a 40-year-old black man. So by the way, I'm pretty sure over 40 in the I'd have to double check this. Employment law lawyers leave it in the comments. I'm pretty sure either 40 and over is a protected class. So your age. Generally immutable characteristics. You cannot mute your age.
Yeah.
And also the very well-known race is also a protected class. So he's a 40-year-old black man. Has since been joined by four other plaintiffs all over the age of 40 who allege Workday has discriminated against them based on age. Together, the plaintiffs claim that they have submitted hundreds of job applications since September 24, 2020 through Workday and were rejected every time, sometimes as quickly as within minutes or hours of submission.
Wow.
Now, They blame Workday itself. They claim that the screening and ranking algorithm, quote, disproportionately disqualifies individuals over the age of 40 from seeking gainful employment. So 40 is a protected class. That's why they're all.
Yeah.
In a statement to The Independent, Workday spokesman shared, quote, "We continue to believe this case is without merit. This is a preliminary and procedural ruling at an early stage of the case relies on allegations, not evidence." There was a May 16th order entered by Rita L. Lynn, United States District Judge, that set a hearing for June 4th, 2025 at 10 a.m. to talk more about class certification, but they do have an initial class certification order.
Wow.
So the court actually issued a 20-page order that's very comprehensive. They go over the legal standards for class certification, mm-hmm. whether or not it applies here, and ultimately decide preliminary collective certification was warranted.
Yep.
Now, the court will go into more on the merits a little bit later, but this is the first stage of a class action lawsuit. So this is very, very early in early days. Now, Lynn writes that, quote, "Proposed collective action is similarly situated because Mobley has substantially alleged the existence of a unified policy, the use of Workday's AI recommendation system to score, sort, rank, or screen applicants." So basically what they're claiming is that, like, a lot of these applicants for disability and race and age, like, if you apply an algorithm to a business owner who are all your users,
yeah.
and the scores on average are very low,
yeah.
business owners are going to reject them more regardless of the merits. Uh-huh. And so their case theory is that, like, Workday, your AI evil. This is your fault. I've been rejected so often. I've ultimately constructively been discriminated against for protected reasons.
Gotcha.
Right. And so the issue of Mobley's claim is whether Workday software disparately impacts applicants over 40. And Lynn sees that there is enough commonality in usage yet specificity in identity and impact to allow for such a lawsuit. So, like, this is actually a pretty squishy situation because, like, there are lots of factors that go into whether or not you take a job or get rejected from a job,
yeah.
across industries, across modes, mm-hmm. how the quality of your application. And so what the court's going to have to do here is they're going to have to, like, balance like the similarities between these applicants against the disparate, like, factors that go into a hiring decision or a screening decision.
Yeah.
Because they've got to decide whether or not you are similar enough to be mm-hmm. class certified.
Mm-hmm.
So tentatively the court has said yes,
yeah.
for now.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't have much information yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Workday claimed that there to be a logistical hurdles in trying to identify these members of the collective, but Lynn said these hurdles are not insurmountable. So that was Workday's argument.
Wow.
Was like, hey, how the fuck do we aren't even the hiring teams rejecting these guys.
Yeah.
They're just using our platforms.
Mm-hmm.
How are we supposed to certify this class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Workday does not want this to become, like, it's much easier to, like, settle individually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure in their terms of service, they probably have forced arbitration claims. And so the number one battle of a class action is whether or not it gets permanently class certified.
Gotcha.
Once it's certified, the thing's too big to stop for mm-hmm. most of the time. There's going to be some sort of settlement. But if you can break up the class before it coalesces,
yeah.
or at least prove that it's small enough not to cause you enough trouble,
yeah.
That is why Workday's counsel is, like, laser focused on this right now. They're locked mm-hmm. in because if they can cut this thing off at the knees, they can stop it from snowballing.
Gotcha.
The order allows Mobley's lawyers to notify other people.
Yeah.
So it allows the solicitation aspect mm-hmm. who may have similar discrimination claims against Workday and allow them to join the suit if they opt to. However, Workday can still ask the court to handle the claims individually
gotcha.
Rather than as a group. The lawsuit is seeking unspecified monetary damages as well as a court order requiring the company to change its practices.
Mm.
Now, specifically making an Age Discrimination in Employment Act, ADEA claim, mm. and the proposed collective in this action includes, quote, all individuals age 40 and over. Yep. There's the protected class from September 24 to 2020 through the present applied for the job opportunities using Workday Inc's job application platform and were denied employment recommendations. So that's a fuck ton of people.
Yeah.
For 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I'm quaking in my boots. If I was Workday.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God. Now Mobley more specifically is alleged Workday's customers delegate traditional hiring functions, including rejecting applicants, to the algorithmic decision-making tools provided by Workday.
Mm.
Given Workday's alleged crucial role in deciding which applicants can get their foot in the door for an interview,
mm-hmm.
Mobley has plausibly alleged that Workday's tools are engaged in conduct that is the heart of equal access to employment opportunities. So they're claiming, Mobley's attorneys are claiming that, like, hey man, you are effectively acting as an agent. Now they yeah. don't necessarily use that phrase very often, but, like, your agency is what caused this.
Mm-hmm.
My beef isn't with the company because your algorithm told them I was dog shit.
Yeah.
And they took your recommendation because as their vendor, that's ultimately Workday's job
yeah,
is to
exactly.
find good candidates, whatever good means.
Uh-huh.
But what good means is you know, is subjective,
yeah.
but ultimately influenced by Workday's decision-making. At least mm-hmm. that's charitably, that's their theory.
Yeah.
The ADEA, where it's concerned, mm-hmm. it in order to prove a claim from discrimination against a qualified individual on the basis of disability, quote, in regard to job application procedures and, quote, the hiring of employees, 42 USC section 12112A, in proving claim for disparate impact under the ADAA, quote, plaintiff must, one, show a significant disparate impact on a protected class or group, check, in theory. Two, identify the specific employment practice or selection criteria at issue, allegedly checked. Yeah. And three, show a causal relationship between the challenged practices or criteria that the disparate impact created. So basically, they got to prove disparate impact, the specific cause, like the specific act that caused that disparate impact, and then the causation between the person, the defendant concerned, and those events.
Gotcha.
Right. And I think of the three, I'm not sure how I would attack this, but of the three, I think the causation is where I would attack if I were Workday's counsel. Because I'd be like, yeah, man, we recommended you. Here were your qualifications. We rejected you anyway.
Yeah.
You know, all we did was recommend it, and they made the ultimate decision. That would be my recommendation.
Well, it feels like the company set the search terms. Probably. That's, like, it feels like that's a key part of Monday's defense is like, listen, man, don't shoot the messenger. Like, they are literally the messenger of like, yo, they needed someone with this certification and you didn't have that. Yeah. So you here's an automated email. We had thousands of amazing applicants and we're so pressed that we couldn't take you.
Our summer associates start next week at Hemet Law. We have three of them. They're amazing.
Yeah.
We had almost 300 applicants. We had like 280 applicants for three positions, which is actually also our largest ever.
Yeah.
Like that can't be discrimination. We just don't have enough seats.
Yeah,
like,
there's not enough seats.
We have to represent. We have to disqualify most people.
Yeah,
and so I don't know. I'm just pointing out there's a lot of squishiness there.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I'm taking Monday's side, but I'm assuming,
you mean Workday
or Workday? Sorry.
I just wanted to make sure.
I'm not assuming that I'm taking Workday's side. Like, I'm just saying that. If I was them, I would make the beef with the company's search terms.
Go after the companies.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what it's so hard to prove hiring discrimination in all but large data sets, practically speaking. Legally, you could, in theory, still do it. But like Hemet Law doesn't have enough of data for you to plausibly prove that we're discriminating against anyone.
Yeah.
So as it would happen, this office, run by 90% of our workforce are women.
Yeah.
In fact, 2/3 of all of Hemet Law's male staff are on this podcast right now. The only man that works at this office that is not in this room is Mr. Hemet himself, and he's out of the country. That's why he's not here. Right.
White men to podcast mics like moths to a flame.
You know what? Now that justice, finally, two white guys have a podcast. This has never been, this is groundbreaking.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, fire.
Anyways, my point was that like, but the reason it's like that is because family law doesn't generally attract male applicants. Like we only get, for every five female applicants, we maybe get one male applicant. And that speaks nothing to the quality of his application. It's just volume. And by volume, we have a vast majority of female.
Yeah.
And the only way you'd be able to like extrapolate that out is if we were like 50 times larger and had way more recruitment volume to like comb through standard practices and to see a historical trend over time. That's why you only ever see, generally speaking, large companies get hit with hiring discrimination suits because there's just not enough material. Right? If mom and pop shop had an ice cream stand and they only hire men, but they only hired 10 people in the last 10 years, how are you going to sue them? Just be like, you're not hiring women. And they'd be saying like, well, we've only hired 10 people. That's not a very large sample.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, that makes sense.
Workday is alleging that evidence should be provided on a sliding scale, due to the fact that discovery has already commenced between the two parties. In essence, Workday say that the more discovery that has occurred, the higher the burden of proof on Mobley to support his claim. So they're saying like, look, dude, we don't want you going on a fishing expedition.
Yeah.
We don't want you looking through everything we've ever done, maybe, to find wrongdoing if we're not already seeing clear indications is sort of their tact.
Gotcha.
Judge Lynn denied that measure, actually, stating that, quote, a sliding scale standard would require a court to weigh competing evidence on an incomplete record, attempting to fairly account for what percentage of discovery is yet to be exchanged. So this is the right call by the judge. Judge is like, things are unpredictable. We're not handing you this multi-billion dollar corporation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Mobley's motion will instead be under substantial allegations of similarity standard, which is like, pretty rote for this sort of procedure. Yeah. The motion is a continuance of the lawsuit Mobley filed. So like we're jumping in the middle of the lawsuit, not the early stages of the lawsuit, not the very beginning. Originally filed as an individual against Workday last year, Workday moved to dismiss in 2024, citing failure to state a claim and arguing that as a software vendor, it is not liable for employment discrimination because it is not an employer here. Mm. The court did find that Mobley failed to allege specific facts that showed Workday intentionally discriminated against him, even though he was able to show that tools had a, quote, disparate impact. So he met one element, but the judge is like, you know, we're not going to kick this out yet, right?
Yeah.
Just like motions to dismiss early are regarded with suspicion by courts because inherently discovery has not happened yet.
Yeah.
And the court's like, we don't want to dismiss this on anything but the merits unless it's like really clear this thing's bogus.
Yeah.
And so the judges are very liberal when it comes to just letting the process play out.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty hard for good reason to get a motion to dismiss early. Doesn't mean you can't try, which is exactly what Workday did.
Yeah.
Like they're like, ah, shucks, it didn't fucking work.
Might as well.
Yeah. They denied motion for dismissal on the grounds that the company acts as an agent for employers under relevant laws and allowed parts of the lawsuit to move forward. The essential parts. In April, Mobley asked Lynn to approve a nationwide class of potential plaintiffs. Mobley and other opt-in plaintiffs said the speed of which they receive rejections to applications means it was unlikely that Humanize had ever even seen their applications. It is thus reasonable to attribute any systemic disparate impact in the scoring of applicants on Workday's policy of using algorithmic decision-making tools.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the current job market, for a little bit of cultural context here.
Real upper.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, you know, that's actually so interesting. Job market's actually doing great. The hiring rate. That's why the macroeconomics on paper look really good.
Yeah.
Or at least they did before Trump's tariffs brought us down by 1.25% as real GDP since the start of his tenure. But setting political items aside, on paper before Trump's tariffs bonanza, our macroeconomy is doing really well.
Yeah.
At least under Biden historically. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
Because what matters during a recession isn't the layoffs at the start of the recession. Layoffs only last like somewhere between 1 and 4 months.
Yeah.
It's actually over pretty quickly, right? It's the hiring rate. The problem is that you can't find anywhere else to work. And that's what's been historically low.
Yeah.
So like that's why we get this sort of dissonance between, wow, everything should be good according to the, you know, quarterly reports. But then there are people out there like sending off thousands of applications.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's the hiring rate that's low. So
that makes sense.
The current job market is tough for pretty much every party involved right now. Hopeful applicants navigating ruthless resume scanners and frequently ghosting, getting ghosted, and understaffed HR managers tasked with keeping offices full. And HR, remember the HR are employees too, and they're usually regarded as a cost center.
Yeah.
So companies rely on these AI and screening tools because they often don't have the manpower.
Yeah.
Like I actually feel for these HR departments. They have to like screen thousands of people. You know, what else are they going to do? Workday's position is actually, as a tool, is actually pretty understandable.
Yeah. Getting that many applications, like how are you supposed to read and retain that much
information? It was overwhelming. We only have one or two people reading all like 300 applicants every single year. That's on top of like, we get like 15 general applicants every single week, most of which aren't good fits or we're not hiring, but we still get them.
Yeah, exactly.
Though software tools have historically helped HR with streamlining processes, LLM AI has now completely automated many parts of the hiring process in such a way that HR professionals can sort through thousands of applications in a fraction of the time when used properly. And even those dystopian fucking TikToks where you see the AI interviewer,
there are new
AI interview products now. I actually know a couple that are making their way through Y Combinator that the AI performs technical interviews and can like interrupt you and ask you questions. It's just so dystopian.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work, but we're heading in that direction because there's huge demand. Companies want to pretty much eliminate their HR department as much as possible.
Wow.
Some of these applications may have been created using AI themselves. So like it's like a garbage in, garbage out problem. Mm-hmm. Everyone's using ChatGPT to make their resume.
Yeah.
Everyone's using ChatGPT to screen their resume.
Exactly.
Statistics continue to show how increasingly difficult it is to break into white-collar jobs. The knowledge industry jobs since the advent of artificial intelligence has been incredibly tight. Computer science is in the toilet for hiring rates in particular because everyone like flooded in over the last 7 years seeing all the day in my life videos on Instagram of people not working. And then Meta was like, yo, we got all these fucking people not working. They overhired during COVID because they wanted, you know, everyone overhired, and not only did they shed all those extra people, but LLM tools have now allowed them to eliminate their junior developer position. So not like all the developers. I think the company's claiming that like we have no more developers, everything's doing. No, yeah. They just have a smaller number of developers overseeing the AI's output.
Yeah.
Because a lot of lower dev roles, they just put out really routine stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And you, it's the architecture guys at the top. Those guys are the real, in my opinion, the real engineers.
Yeah.
As someone who has a lot of family, and my uncle is a professor of neural networks at University of Washington. My father works at Microsoft. So they complain a lot about how you can be a developer and like contribute nothing to the team, but it's really hard to tell because the code infrastructure is a team effort.
Yeah.
So like, how do you tell which guys are actually contributing? And so that's why all these companies are talking about how many developers they're cutting. It's because there's a lot of bloat.
Yeah.
But before, it's been hard to tell whose role could be replicable, but LLMs are changing that.
Yeah.
Now, statistics continue to show how increasingly difficult it is to break into these industries, but the ACLU has already delivered a warning about how big of a discrimination threat AI poses in getting hired. Mm. The algorithms that AI software is utilized can rely on surface level factors like professional educational background, but can also factor in age, race, and gender to determine an applicant's qualification, bypassing the human ability to holistically assess competency.
Yeah.
And this is partly because sometimes they're designed that way. Mm-hmm. Another time, it's just a matter of bad data. Right,
yeah.
These data sets that use to train these AIs for whatever their function is. Mm-hmm. If you train it on a data set of facial recognition, you saw this with facial recognition programs where like it was trained on a data set of white guys, and then it can't fucking recognize black people because it's never fucking seen a black person.
Yeah.
And then it accuses an innocent guy because the facial recognition software isn't as good as recognizing other races or genders.
Yeah.
So it's basically garbage in, garbage out. That's sort of influencing this.
Yeah.
Now, the case against Workday shows how employment law is evolving alongside AI, rapid AI adoption, and federal and state agencies have begun to create guidelines to help protect employees and applicants alike.
Yeah.
Last year, New York City began requiring employers to notify candidates about the use of AI decision-making software, and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which, by the way, was defunded by Trump, just heads up, launched an initiative in 2021 to ensure AI-assisted software complies with EEO laws. I should check, but it's a strong possibility that program has now been shut down.
Yeah.
Everyone's been fired.
They released
a technical assistance document in May of 2023, which has since been taken down. Yep, there we go. Yep. Which has since been taken down by the Trump administration. There it is in my notes. Trump recently signed an executive order to direct federal agencies, including the EEOC, to eliminate enforcement based on disparate theory.
Wow.
Crazy. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. Well, we just need AI to take over like the ethics part of HR, and then we can completely get rid of HR. I'm being sarcastic. I know this is my first time.
Chat, cancel him.
Yeah, exactly.
Kill him. So limiting the number of government-led investigations into AI and algorithmic discrimination can only be unleashing the Silicon Valley bros to basically do their worst work.
Yeah.
While private litigation matters, such as against Workday, they can continue. So this is all going to be coming down to private action, which really brings up a really interesting thought here, is that like when legislatures at the federal level, like against gun makers, pass legislation that says you can't sue companies for XYZ conduct, which just happened in Georgia. Mike Rafe was on the podcast recently, and he was talking about in Georgia legislature just said you can't sue Roundup.
That's wild.
No reason. Just like you just can't sue them even if they give you cancer, which they have. They've given a lot of people horrible cancer. But when that happens, lawsuits aren't just a measure for recovery for individuals.
Yeah.
They are also access and transparency tools. During discovery, like when you make someone immune to a lawsuit, you also make them immune to discovery.
Yeah.
And so you lose that transparency. So at least for now, we still have this tiny crack in the door to get some insight on what the hell is going on in these companies. We'll see if that holds. Trump's deregulation mission in the AI space was teased during his 2024 election campaign, where he announced his plan to repeal Joe Biden's executive order, which provided a safety net and privacy standards for AI, including ensuring that principles and practices are developed to mitigate the harms AI poses to workers.
Wow.
Quote, "When I'm reelected, I will cancel Biden's artificial intelligence executive order and the ban on the use of AI to censor the speech of American citizens on day one." See also American companies.
Wow.
The ruling on Mobley v. Workday could set a precedent for how companies can use AI to hire employees moving forward as the technology becomes more and more ubiquitous.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff. Kind of dystopian. I do hope that we don't end up in a Blade Runner-esque future where we have like ChatGPT running androids and like hunting us down in our, I don't know, like It evokes a lot of mixed emotions, particularly as someone who's in leadership in a few companies. I empathize with the struggle of a lot of small, medium, and even large businesses to find the best talent. I also realize that the interview process is fundamentally broken. I think the challenge is that we just haven't been able to find anything more effective that's also less invasive.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the worst system we've got except for all the other ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like I could know more about you, Sam, in the interview process if I like came to your house. Like, like if I lived with you for a week. But like, A, that's not scalable. But setting aside the logistics issues, that's also horrifying.
Google, let me see all this guy's tax documents. That's so funny.
I think we're going to call it here for today, Sam. This is I actually have one more story very, very briefly. On May 22nd, the Supreme Court divided 4-4 on a matter of whether states may reject religious charter schools from receiving public funding. And they hung 4-4 because Amy Coney Barrett recused herself. Though she did not give a specific reason, it's probably because she had substantial personal ties to the attorneys representing the petitioners, St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School.
Gotcha.
Now, when the Supreme Court divides, it means the lower court stands, which is the reason I'm talking about this briefly, aside from the merits of this case, is because that's why we need a national injunction system.
Yeah.
Because if, imagine a world where injunctions only held within their districts, right? And then went up to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court hung or didn't have a majority or anything like that. What the fuck happened? Like, there's no answer, right?
Wow.
And that's why I'm talking about this here, because if nationwide injunctions are curtailed or struck down by the Supreme Court, it would cause a whole lot of logistical issues.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example. It's a case of Oklahoma Statewide Charter School Board et al. Petitioner versus Jen Turner Drummond, Attorney General of Oklahoma, versus St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School. God, these names are a nightmare. And Jen Turner Drummond v. Attorney. Basically a whole bunch of fucking people.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of fucking people are involved. Amy recused herself. And that's actually, I really want to give quick props to her before we close out the show, because she was supposed to be sort of like the conservative powerhouse for like evangelicals in America on the court. And she's actually been very consistent in her views, which I respect. Not so with Alito and Clarence Thomas. That's why I have beef with them. It's not because I disagree with them. It's because they don't hold to their values when it matters or when it's when it like inconveniences their political mission. But guys, we're going to call it here very quickly. Three stories, mostly two. We have a new script writer. So huge shout out to Megan. She has been a huge addition to our team. She put together most of the materials you're reading today and that I read today to you. Let us know how this felt. We're expanding the team here. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back very soon with more stories. We've got some really cool reviews court reviews coming up. I think we're going to be going over the Rust shooting coming up next week. So by the time you hear this, it'll probably be around mid-June, early June. We'll find out. But thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Link in description if you want to support the podcast. Go to our website, go to our socials, you know where to find us. But leaving us a review on podcast platforms, particularly Apple Podcasts and Spotify, that's the other one, would be a huge help. Thanks so much, guys. See you next week.
Later.